Lucifer whispering silently into your mind. Who walks behind? Who walks behind? Standing tall, invincible, but do not forget your knives. To save your lives, to save your lives. Don't you forget about dying. Don't you forget about your friend death. Don't you forget that you will die. Don't you vomit savage slurs, spewed out wickedly. To hide from me, to hide from me. Navigate all alone on this tempestuous sea. To ride with me, to ride with me. Don't you forget about dying. Don't you forget about your friend death. Don't you forget that you will die. Don't you forget about dying. Don't you forget about your friend death. Don't you forget that you will die.
Bonjour tout le monde et bienvenue sur Nino Domani a Palermo, vous êtes à l'écoute de Simone Cilluffo. Don't forget to listen to the podcast on Spotify. Le nom de l'émission c'est Simplement Culture Italienne et bien sûr sur le site della radio, radiogalera.org. Antappare le non delle missioni domani a Palermo. Aujourd'hui, we will speak in English because we have a great author, a great writer, a great thinker. He's a Romanian thinker. He's Mr. Stefan Bolea. Hi, Stefan.
Hello, Simone.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. You?
Fine, fine. I'm very happy to do this emission with you, this show with you, because of the, you are very an interesting person, because indeed you have 44, you are 44, and you already published 12 books, and really it's like 13, because today you received.
Yes, you're right, Simone. I expect to publish my 13th book in English next year about Cioran.
So you receive it just today the notice that your 13th book will publish, no?
Yes, will be published at Springer Nature Publisher House in English.
So the last book is on Ciolano. And in these 13 books that you have, 44, you are 44, is impressive. You won also a lot of prizes. You won a lot of awards. So which kind of awards? Can you speak a bit of your awards?
Yes, I had many awards in Romania. For instance, my last book on Jung, which was published also in English, won the Apostrophe Award and was also nominated for the Essay of the Year Award in 2020. I had an award also for my short stories at the International Prize Paul Celan.
What's the name of the short stories?
Last 2 minutes is the name of the short story.
Oh, okay. So it's very short, only 2 minutes. I joke.
Something like that.
I joke.
No, but you're right. It lasts only 2 minutes, the action.
Okay, nice. It's like a elliptic time, we can say, no?
Yes.
And you cited this prize is a prize the name of an author on a great Romanian writer that I didn't know, Paul Celan. You want to speak about Paul Celan, please?
Yes, he's a great Romanian German writer. So he was born in Romania. And then moved to Germany, and is considered one of the best German poets in the 20th century. And moreover, is important for our discussion because he translated Choran's first book from French, Choran's book Précis de Composition. And it's somehow paradoxical that both were Romanian, but Celan wrote in German and Choran later wrote in French.
Explain to the public, the French public, and overall, how we meet. We meet in a seminary in Aix-Marseille University. You were doing a conference, a speech about Ciolano, this guy we will speak later, and you are a fellow researcher. You wrote a lot of essay, poetry books, short novels, philosophical books. You have a strong. You are not only a writer, but you are also a researcher. You have a fellow researcher. You have a PhD in philosophy, another PhD in literature. So I have the impression you are combining these two kind of PhD for your writing and your thinking, literature and philosophy. More than psychology, yes. Psychology and literature, like somebody like Julia Kristeva, for example, is a Bulgarian. French-Bulgarian writers and also thinkers and also fellow researcher. You are more philosophy and literature. And before you make a speech, an interesting speech in the Aix-Marseille University about Choran. But before coming in the subject of Choran, that is also the subject of your last book that will be published, you have the confirmation today, will be published in 2026 in English. Before speaking of Choran, we should speak of Dostoevsky, because in my opinion, not only in my opinion, Dostoevsky is kind of a father of a certain kind of literature and philosophy, the philosophy and literature we are approaching to. So, can you say something about Dostoevsky?
Yes, you're very right that Dostoevsky anticipates this literary and philosophical trend. And his notes from Underground, one of his first novels, introduces this conflict between existentialism and nihilism, which greatly interests me. It's not a huge difference between those trends, between existentialism and nihilism, but however, there is a crucial one.
Okay, to stay with Dostoevsky, now we are speaking about Dostoevsky. After you, we will speak about your thinking and Ciolano thinking. To stay with Dostoevsky, who describes or better anticipate this difference in his writing between existentialism and nihilism.
Yes,
Conforming
many
to
of his
Dostoevsky,
characters.
what's the opinion of Dostoevsky for this distinction?
He's torn apart between these trends. I mean, many of his characters are nihilists, which are preoccupied with the problem of meaning.
So, what do you mean about meaning? The meaning of your life, the meaning of what else, which kind of meaning?
Precisely that, the meaning of our existence.
Okay, the meaning of the existence. So existence and nihilism, okay. And, sorry, we can see the two concepts of nihilism and existentialism are very related. But, in my opinion, the nihilism is like denying the life, no? The existence. What do you think about?
Yes, you are certainly right. The difference between those two is that for existentialism, death is viewed from the perspective of life, and according to nihilism, life is viewed from the perspective of death, the other way around.
So, that's a fundamental problem, a fundamental issue. Existentialism, death is viewed in the perspective of life, and nihilism, life is viewed in the perspective of death. Okay.
Yes.
And you can deeply go on this thinking, on this explanation, please.
Yes. If we listen to the nihilists, life becomes meaningless, becomes absurd because of death. The death makes our lives a tragedy without any meaning. But according to existentialism, despite our mortality, we have to somehow achieve our destiny. We have to realize our lives. So I guess, just as Albert Camus argued, the most important question is life worth living or not?
So, for Dostoevsky, is life worth living or not?
He's conflicted about that too. Some of his characters, like Prince Mishkin or Alyosha Karamazov...
Just I stop you 2 seconds to understand for everybody. Prince Mishkin is the main character of The Idiot. He's considered as an idiot by everybody. En français, on dirait ensemble d'esprit. And who is of the three brothers, Karamazov, Alyosha?
Alyosha was the naive and good-natured one, the youngest of the three brothers, of the four, we may say, to have a spoiler. And in the novel, he was the moral one who is attracted to religion. Mishkin and him would say that life has a meaning, but we have to keep in mind that Dostoevsky's best characters are the villains, not the good guys. I'm talking about individuals such as Kirillov in The Demons, Stavrogin, Ivan Karamazov. They are nihilists and they believe that life is meaningless.
Okay, so they are the bad guys, like in Crime Châtiment, in Crime and Punishment, but they are coming up with suiciding, as you tell me. But in Crime and Châtiment, Raskolnikov, the main character, ends to repent. Donc, we can see this double nature. The bad guy that killed a woman, he killed her. It was like in a strong, strong travail, strong, strong douleur, I don't know how to say, strong pain because of culpability.
Yes.
After
torment.
He repent. Sorry again?
A great torment,
exactly. And after he repent, the other one, as you say me, don't repent and prefer to suicide. The bad guys.
Yes.
Okay.
It's true.
At this moment, we decided yesterday to put the song Ghost of the song of the Ghost, that is a Sweden group. It was pro memoria, this song. This song, I decided today was like a changing, improvised. I put this song in the very beginning, instead of my jungle. And I put this song to introduce this episode. And pro memoria, as what you can say about this song that we listen in the instead of the jungle. What do you say about this Swedish song?
It's a Swedish band, Ghost, and this song specifically is about Memento Mori, about death.
So Memento Mori is not like when the generals, when the emperor, Latin emperors, Roman emperors said to the people that going to the soldier went in the war, you will be a hero, but consider you will die. Memento mori, souviens toi de mourir, que vas-tu va mourir. Donc, ils l'envoyaient mourir. They send soldiers to die to in the war to conquer the empire. And the soldiers were very proud of that. Was also different in the medieval exception when we say, when the Iglesia say, don't be peche, I don't know in English. I will say, don't try to...
Sinners, don't sin
because after you have to die, you have to go to paradise, otherwise you know, you will join the devil in the hell. So that's a memento mori different in this song. Which kind of memento mori we have in this song?
Memento vivere. I mean, our death should wake us up to the fact that we must live our life. We must wake up to life, to existence.
So it's more existentialist than nihilist.
Yes, you're right. Yes.
Okay. That's very interesting, this conversation we have today with Stefan. We come back to nihilism, and I would ask you if nihilism during Dostoevsky period era and also after Dostoevsky has had an impact on politics, because in France we know, for example, that existentialism in people like Camus, in people like Jean-Paul Sartre, was very engaged, the left wings engaged. Sartre said that a true intellectual is somebody that fight for his time, for his actuality, and so he has to fight to defend poor people, to defend working class. That was the thinking of Sartre. But and at the same time, there was another wings of the existentialism that was Heidegger, was more right wings. I don't know so much Heidegger, but I know that he was right wings, inspiring also Nazism, no?
Yes.
And I asking you, what about the political influence of the nihilism, even in the epoch, in the period of Dostoevsky and after the period of Dostoevsky?
Yes, and nihilists, Russian nihilists, had close ties to anarchists, and they were very anti-government in the last period of the 19th century. And we can see those nihilists in action in Turgenev's novel Fathers and Sons. You know, the nihilist Bazarov is one of the first great characters that introduced this line of thought. Bazarov.
Bazarov, no, I didn't know.
They were left-wing, those nihilists, but they were anti-Tsar, they were anti-church, they were anti-authority. So some of the first real nihilists, nihilists like Nechayev, were friends with guys like Bakunin, for instance, one of the greatest anarchists.
Yes. Bakunin is the father of anarchy, of anarchy, with the Malatesta.
Exactly, precisely.
And Dostoevsky in his life, he was starting when he was young with adhering to complotism against Tsar, adhering to this kind of nihilist terrorist. And after he was in jail in the Gulag, and when he was there, he was condemned to death. And after they stopped his condemnation, as you say me, what you say me about that?
He was sentenced to death, as you say, and he was pardoned in the last moment, and that changed his life. I mean, some critics, some biographers say that this is the beginning of his mental illness, of his epilepsy, and indeed, you are right, he had a political activity. But more and more in his last years, he turned to God, to some kind of radical orthodoxy that brings him close to Tolstoy's Tolstoy from the last period.
Yeah, so Dostoevsky was really compromised about his politics idea. He went in the Gulag, he fought, he will die, because he was condemned to die, to death, sorry, sorry again. And after he was saved, anyway, he was graced, and after that, he start in hypothesis, as you say, we don't know, he start epileptic crisis. And after that, he has a conversion. He has a conversion to religion from nihilism, atheism, anti-authority, anti-tsarism, anarchy. He has a conversion to religion that we can also constate in more of the... more of the works of Dostoevsky, but as you speak before of Frère Karamazov, we have like a kind of dialogue in three voices where we have the nihilist, a kind of judge, and we have the orthodox, and finally, the religious one, Alyosha, as we say, win. Because it's like Dostoevsky wants, for Dostoevsky, like, I have the opinion, sorry again, I have the opinion that Dostoevsky he's not Manichaean, he's not Manichaeus, it's not like in the world there is good and there is bad. Good and bad is one thing, one only stuff. You have to pass for the bad to arrive to the good, to arrive even to God. So this way of thinking of Dostoevsky is in such a way different of the other thinkers, of the nihilists in general, of the pessimists in general. So What my question to come now, we stop, we speak with religion, Dostoevsky, passing from good, from bad to good to achieve God, etc. But what the relation between Dostoevsky and your author, the one you are studying, Choran?
To answer some of your earlier speech, his novel, The Devils, The Demons, Dostoevsky's novel, The Devils, which was translated even in the end of the 19th century in French with the title Le Possédé, shows this nihilistic revolutionary lab. So we see that there in this novel, nihilism at work. And Choran, who read Dostoevsky very early in his teenage years, was very impressed with Dostoevsky's villains, with guys like Stavrogin or Ivan Karamazov, which were his true heroes.
So Stavrogin was one of the protagonists of the demons, and Ivan Karamazov is the brother Karamazov. So he is attracted Choran for negative characters, for bad guys.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Precisely.
And what about feature of Dostoevsky, that he passed from the bad to our bad stuff to arrive to the good stuff, to achieve even God? What about this evolution, we can say? What about this? What do you think about this? Is related to Choran? What is the difference? What is your thinking, your own thing about this?
Yes, you're certainly right. It's an important feature, but we must think also about Søren Kierkegaard, who made the distinction between morality, ethics, this good and evil stuff, and religion, and said that, for instance, God is beyond ethics, is beyond good and evil. And this theme, beyond good and evil, comes also from Nietzsche, and Nietzsche was very influential for Choran's early thinking.
So we see that as Choran is influenced by Kierkegaard, by other authors that like Nietzsche. In which way was influenced specifically from Nietzsche?
Choran believed, and we also must say that we live in an universe shaped by the death of God.
So I remember when I was young, I was 19 in Italy, and I was doing my BAC, we say in English, the final year before university or school. And there was a commission, and we have to explain all the program, all the ministerial program of the year. So for each subject, all the program. And in philosophy, I was asked about Nietzsche. And I said, Nietzsche died on the cross, in the cross, and not on the cross. The jury, there was like an Italian teacher saying, no, that's a mistake. Jesus don't die in the cross. That's an Italian mistake. Jesus died on the cross. And I say, no, it's not a mistake, because in Nietzsche thinking, Jesus died in his church because of the church. And what Choran says about this Nietzsche thinking?
It's very nice what you have said. And Choran also said that for 2,000 years, Jesus has revenged himself on us for not having died on a couch.
So you are saying me that if Jesus was dying in his bed, in his couch, like everybody die, That was not so a mediatic event, because crucifixion was like a huge mediatic event, the crucifixion of Christ. And if he was dying on this sofa, on this couch, then it's not, nobody was Catholic. Very nice. Very, very, very strong, very nice. So it's like a mediatic event, like a crucifixion of Jesus Christ, like it's like a Jesus Christ Superstar, the movie, no?
Exactly, exactly.
So to break with these religion themes, we can listen to a song that you propose. Which one you propose? The Megadeth, no?
Yes, I would like to listen to Megadeth, Symphony of Destruction.
Okay, we will listen to it if the radio won't. Okay, the radio won't. We'll listen to it. And after you can say two or three words about it.
Okay.
I'm afraid of the voice.
Watch him become a god. Watch people's heads all roll. Like the marionette.
So, for the people that have not aged, we are already in the middle of our life. We are 44. We know for sure the Megadeth. Megadeth is speak about the Megadeth, this satanic group.
I like this song especially, which is from the album Countdown to Extinction from 1992. I like these lyrics especially: the earth starts to rumble, world's power fall, a warring for the heavens, a peaceful man stands tall. And I believe that Dev Mustaine wants to say that we have to keep our mind, our lucidity, in the midst of generalized insanity, in the midst of wars and all the bad stuff that happens in the world.
So what I understand that we have to keep in mind our lucidity in the mess of this shitty world, no?
Exactly. Yes.
So this in the kind of extinction of this world.
Yes, in the kind of this world going down.
Okay, and to come back to this concept, now we really speak about Choran, the Choran, what is fault, what you can already start about giving us the title of the constructing title of your new book published in 2026 in English. And you can speak about the life of him. Speak about we start with the title. You can speak about Chorano. Speak about Chorano, please.
Okay, so my book is called Choran's Anti-Humanism: Studies in the Age of Extinction, I'm speaking about Choran's anti-humanism at large. Speaking about this thinker's life, Choran wrote six works in Romanian. One of his best known is his first work, On the Heights of Despair, Sur le Cime de Désespoir. Afterwards, Choran moved to Berlin, Munich, with the Humboldt Fellowship. In the late 1930s, he moved to Paris, after the war, he began writing in French, his first book in French, A Short History of Decay, Précis de Décomposition, was published in 1949, won the Rivarol Prize. This Romanian-French thinker was celebrated as one of the greatest stylists of modern French language. Choran lived.
One of the great stylists. I mean, a great stylist. We mean someone who really who really know the French language, even if he's a foreigner. So he writes in modern French, we can approach him to the elegance of Dostoevsky, to the elegance of, je sais pas, in French author Montpassant, for example, as an example, but he's a foreigner, and there is a new elegance of the new French. It's very, very impressive also, these things, that one is foreigner can write in a very elegant French.
Yes, you're right. It's something very rare. We can also compare him to Nabokov, who wrote in English, although he was Russian, or to Elias Canetti, who was Bulgarian, but wrote his masterpiece, Die Blendung, in German.
Okay, so there are some geniuses all over the world.
Yes.
And he won also the same. He won several prizes, not only Riverol, but it wants also Sambov, Komba, Nimiem, and finally always refused all these prizes.
Yes, he refused these prizes because he wanted to stay anonymous, to not be well known, and he lived in poverty all of his life because he constantly refused to take a job.
So he constantly refused to take job. At the same time, he refused to live by his plume, as we say in French, to live by his writing.
Yes.
It's really orthodox, more orthodox than Dostoevsky, maybe, you know?
And he wanted to be a free man.
He wanted to be a free man, that's for sure, that's for sure. And free from society, the real nihilist, we can say. The real nihilist, the real anarchist. And what about his poetics?
Yes, he was influenced by German nihilism, by philosophers like Nietzsche, Max Stirner, Philip Mailander. He also loved the English romantic poets. He learned English to read them. Guys like Shelley and Keats. I think he's also influenced by several French symbolist poets like Baudelaire and L'Autre-Amant and Rimbaud. Moreover, he's a pessimist in the school of Schopenhauer. He's also a marginal existentialist at the border of existentialism, and he's also attracted to Spanish mysticism.
What do you mean about Spanish mysticism?
He was a big fan of the works of Saint Teresa Davila, and he really liked her work, The Inner Castle, and he considered Spanish mysticism and Russian nihilism to have something in common. I mean, their intensity, their feverishness.
Yesterday you speak about the fact that in the Spanish mysticism in Santa Teresa d'Avila, a way to be directly in contact with God. You can develop this, please.
Yes, mystics don't need rules, don't need dogma to be with God, to get in communion with God. And the connection with radical nihilism is that for some nihilists, nothingness, the abyss, the void, has some mystical qualities. It's almost like they get in touch with the primordial nothingness. And we can also speak about not only about Spanish mystics, but about mystics like Meister Eckhart or Jakob Böhme, who wrote about the original Nihil, original abyss, Ungrund in German. Original abyss, original void.
Ah, okay. So, very, very interesting all that. Even if he was atheist, even if he was like very interested about this mysticism, it's very interesting. And what about now we come back to your book, and we say again the title, please say again the working title.
Yes, my working title is, if the publisher doesn't decide to change it, Chorans, Anti-Humanism Studies in the Age of Extinction.
So, what are you speaking? The main concept, isn't that?
Yes, and my main concept is Nutman, Neomul in Romanian. Nutman.
The Nutman. So, yes. Now I have two questions to ask you. The first one was what you mean about anti-humanism. Yesterday we didn't speak about that, but we can do it now. What you mean about anti-humanism?
Anti-humanism is famous in Michel Foucault's work, like The Order of Things, when he spoke about the death of man, that man should perish in the sand of the sea, like a grain of sand in the sea. But Cioran's anti-humanism is before this Foucault's trend. It's from the 1930s, and being influenced by Nietzsche, he also introduces misanthropy in his work,
okay,
and being influenced also by poets like Lautréamont and Baudelaire.
Okay, because humanism is like love for human. Misanthropy is the against, is the opposite, no? So Cioran is misanthropic, is hate people.
Yes.
Like Sid Vicious.
Yes.
Sid Vicious said, I hate people. No, the first one of the first punk of the 80s, 70s, even they say, I hate people. Indeed, it's like this anarchism, this nihilism, this pessimism is very close to punk culture, no? The new way of nihilism, we can say, no?
Yes, or like typo negative. Peter Steele said in one of his songs, he said, we hate everyone.
Yeah, I hate everyone, yeah. Yeah. And the nihilism, in the difference of the 19th century, that were terrorists that tried to kill the Tsar, and the nihilism of today, as you made me a quote, Pete Modrian, I think, you made me a quote of you made me a quote about the nihilism in politics today, no? Say me.
Yes, we talked the previous time about Jean Baudrillard.
Jean Baudrillard, pardon.
Yes, he said at the end of his book on simulation, that is also featured in the Matrix movie. Neo has a CD hidden in Baudrillard's copy in English. And Jean Baudrillard said at the end of the book that if other peoples are terrorists with arms, I'm a nihilist with ideas.
Very interesting. So now we explain this stuff of anti-humanism, and now I want to ask you what Cioran and you mean for not man, because we have seen the overman of Nietzsche that influenced Cioran. We have seen Max Stirner that was the follower of Nietzsche that said in his book, there's a very, very, very famous sentence of Stirner that say, at the sunrise of the new times, born the man God. So the believing an arm in the man, like an overman, and not in God, because man become himself a God. So Cioran, he speak about not man, so he's denying the man. What do you, can you go deeply with this concept of not man?
Yes, both Nietzsche and Stirner were anti-humanists and had also this utopian version of anti-humanism. They believed that the Übermensch, the overman, is a replacement for God, as you said. But we can understand the difference between the overman and the notman, thinking that the first one is a being who accepts eternal recurrence, while the second one, the notman, is able to live with nowadays extinction.
So, eternal recurrence, to be clear with our audience, is like the overman. We can experience life in a better way, in an eternal infinite number of times, no?
Yes, yes.
Contrary
to
the not man, that is in the now, in the today, I mean, he cannot live eternally. And as you say, he has this kind of tension, no? As you say, no?
Same. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. So the Overman is able to experience eternal recurrence, to relive his life for an infinite number of times, while the Nutman is able to endure the tension of apocalyptic times.
What do you mean about apocalyptic times? I agree with you, but explain it better for the lady of the 70s who's listening to us. Ciao, mamma.
Ciao, mamma, too. I think, yes, I think of a time such as our own. I believe that the human being, that we are dying in a certain way, then, and that means there is a certain impasse about humanism, about unconditional love of man. What I mean by that is that the biotechnological improvements that await us in the future will transform human beings, will transform us in our essence, in our core.
In our existence, okay. And so these apocalyptic times and these biotechnological improvement, you mean the advancement of technology in the internet, for example, or the fact we are traced, like the satellite, everything is traced, we have no privacy, we have not any more private life. This is causing the apocalyptic time, no? As we are not in something dystopic. We are already in apocalyptic time, I think, no? Which...
Yes, exactly that.
Yeah, so it's the scenario, as a movie you cited, Matrix, is... Matrix maybe is more strong in the situation, but we are already in Matrix times, we can say, no?
Yes, yes, we are nearing our end. We are only living this Matrix scenario.
So this Matrix scenario was more dystopic in the 80s when Ridley Scott did the one of the best cyberpunk movie, was Blade Runner, is the father of all the cyberpunk movie. As a very great movie, Blade Runner. So already in the 80s, we had the cyberpunk, we had the Philip Roth, no? Philip Roth even in the late 70s, Blade Runner. But I want now...
Philip K. Dick.
Philip Dick, yeah, Philip Roth, Philip Dick. So I want now to end this scenario, Matrix scenario, and I want to make, we do a flashback. We go back in the years, and you will propose us a folk Romanian song that you let me listen, and it's very nice. So it's from Maria Tenase, let's say the title and the meaning, and after you can translate some word if you want.
Yes, I propose to you... Maria Tanase's folk song Cine iubește și lasă, which means who loves and abandons.
Okay, and we listen to this fantastic song.
Absent.
2 minutes, explain the very joys of the song, please.
Yes. It's a curse born out of love.
Curse means in French malédiction. C'est une malédiction.
Malédiction, yes. Maybe I should translate.
Two or three sentences, because we have not any more time.
The one who loves and leaves behind, God should give him a punishment. The crawling of the snake, the stepping of the bug, the whizzing of the wind, the dust of the earth.
And we stop here with the Sufond, with the on the you can hear a song of Saba, a Lebanese singer. The name is The Hours. He's speaking about the sadness, a bad thing of life. I say very thank you to Stefan, and I hope to see you soon for another emission. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you for the invitation, dear Simone. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you, also for me. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, and see you soon, Nino, domani a Palermo. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.